morning. This is the Chorus Call operator. Welcome to Generalfinance conference call presenting Q3 2022 results and the business plan spanning 2022-2024. Let me remind you that all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, a Q&A session will be held, and the presentation is available on the Generalfinance website. To be assisted by an operator during the conference call, press star and zero on your phone keypad. Let me now turn the conference over to Mr. Massimo Gianolli, CEO of Generalfinance. Sir, please go ahead.
Welcome. Welcome to this very special day for us because Generalfinance is 40 years old today. We were founded in 1982, and so today we become 40 years old. It's a very important moment in time for us. We have a deeply rooted tradition, long-standing expertise, and we managed to develop a business based on supporting distressed companies. We are now trying to focus both in our team and our IT platform. Thanks to those two items, we managed to grow the company, providing quality. Ours, it's a very well-known history. We've been in existence for 40 years now. In  1995, we had two industrial groups joining our company, taking a stake in our company. It's a growth history. It's a healthy growth history, but of course, we needed funding as well to support growth. This is how we get to the present time. Creval took a stake in our equity. In 2016, Bank of Italy gave the green light, according to 106 law and regulation. We went to the IPO way, June this year. Over the last few years, we have led the company to the current 7.5 billion turnover, 1.5 million managed maturities. We really attach a lot of value to our company because if you look at the way the company now, it really bears witness to our expertise over the year. Our CAGR between 2019 and 2021 is 54%, and it's very interesting to notice that we have exceeded our compounded annual growth rate this year, early this year, if we compare ourselves against last year on a like-for-like basis. It's clear that Generalfinance, times of crisis, we always manage to somehow leap forward. We have an anti-cyclical business, and so 2020 and 2021 were big drivers for our operations. The same drive also applies to 2022. We'll give you more info on that. We'll elaborate on that in a minute. A very important thing, and we talked about risk profile, but we also have to mention profit or bottom line, because growing is indeed important, but you have to retain profitability during your growth or over the growth. Profitability has to be kept under control. The CAGR and net income, net profit, is slightly declining, starting from 50 to and going down to 40 in the first nine months of the year. It's a telltale evidence that it's possible to grow to double or triple volumes by retaining excellent profitability. The bottom line is always under control. Sitting next to me and the drawing up of data as of end of September was taken care of by our CFO, Mr. Ugo Colombo. Of course, he added value to Generalfinance by joining us. Good morning to all of you. Some figures about our quarterly report, as the focus of our presentation will be our outlook and our business plan going forward. The table you see projected summarizes the growth trends we have experienced. So up 40%, on an adjusted base, the increase of our profit. We have one-off 1.2 million of one-off costs that were used for the IPO. Very interesting is to see how in the upper part of our income statement, so we are up 34% in our net interest and other banking income. It's an excellent trend if you compare it to the last 3 years. We've managed to grow by retaining an excellent profitability and in line with our objectives, both as far as interest rate is concerned and interest margin and commissions, defining our revenues. Then costs. Costs, despite the fact that we've been growing very strongly, we've kept those under control. Operating costs, with the exception of one-off, are up 22% roughly, in line with our historical data set, with a run rate, as far as our net profit is concerned, a run rate that is in line with our targets and with the growth target we've given ourselves over the last few years. If we look at the table again, we're on page 10, the cost-income ratio, you have to add one-off. So for the first time is below, well, it's 38%, it's below 40%, and that's the cost-income ratio. And for us, this is of paramount importance. It was 51% in 2019, and in 2016, it was 75%. So the momentum behind it, so cost-income ratio has been benefiting us. The benefit we draw from this mainly come from our proprietary platform that will be described later on during the presentation that enabled us to grow and to reduce our data leverage. And then 330 million growth year-on-year 34% versus turnover, which is growing 50%. That enables us to make our capital very efficient. The business is growing less than RWAs, so its profitability over RWA. For the first time, we have more than 400 million worth of total assets. And then, of course, we benefited 18 million, so our assets were increased by 18 million thanks to the IPO. So 54 million euro with an 87% growth in our shareholders' equity. We have a low-risk profile, so cost-income ratio, business efficiency. If we compare ourselves against Q2, the gross NPE ratio goes from 0.5 to 0.98. And at the end of the quarter, of course, we have technical outstanding maturities, and I gave you the updated figures. NPE ratio is below 70%, 0.7%. So we're in line with Q1 of 2022, and that is very important because the business model we're relying on, despite the very challenging backdrop we are acting against, so it's a very challenging economic backdrop we have to comply with. And this will apply for the rest of 2022 as well. There are a number of factors that come into play, but despite that, our company retained a very good asset quality profile. So top of the screen, if we compare it to the Assifact market share, 3.7%, we are one-third of that. We are talking about market growth and NPE ratio, so we are well below the industry average, so to say. And then cost of risk, and then LLPs and disbursements, that's the ratio. Year-on-year, that is stable. And if we compare that against the first quarter, this reconfirms our ability as a company to grow at a meaningful pace. And then when it comes to financial statement and receivables, we have a very low risk profile. One more thing that I'd like to underline is the fact that we rely on a very simple business model. Our balance sheet is very simple. You see, look at the assets and 56 million euro, cash and cash equivalents, 56 million euro, and then tangible, intangible assets, not very high figures, and it's a very well covered. We have 330 million worth of funding, and we'll elaborate on that as we move on. So it's a balance sheet that's very simple also to depict, to show in figures. Over the third quarter, we've improved the company capitalization. We've strengthened our capital position thanks to the IPO. And CET1, as you can see on the table, in the histogram at the center, went from 15.5 in the first half to 16.7 at the end of September, and with a further widening of capital buffers. Let me remind you that for general fund, we have 106, so we're not a bank. The minimum requirement for CET1 is lower than that you would find in the banking industry, minimum 4.5% versus a minimum for a bank that would be at least twice that figure if we talk CET1-wise. So capital buffer is very strong. That was further strengthened over the course of the current, of Q3, so to say, and that is very important to somehow look forward and when it comes to our business plan and the use of proceeds coming from the IPO. Again, total capital ratio, again, the minimum threshold is 100 for the 106 regulation, is the minimum for a CRR regulation. It's 8%, and we have a 12.4% instead, so we are well above that. And we have a total capital ratio in excess of 20 percentage points. If we look at our listed peers at the top of the range, of the best capitalized peers, so we are right there. Over the course of the quarter, we have strengthened our funding base. If we look at the lower part of the table, the available funding went up, landing at 740 million, the green bar. It's the entire funding facilities we have available versus the financial indebtedness at the beginning of the time frame, which was 327, with 56 million liquidity position. We have a counterbalancing capacity, which is about 470, plus the capital structure that is enabling us to really look ahead with good growth opportunities. And we have a funding base that fully covers the necessary means, the necessary amounts we need to support growth and drive growth. And if you look at the top of the slide, we're on page 13, you look at the diversification of funding sources. We've tried to diversify our funding, and we've done so over the last 2 or 3 years. And more specifically, in addition to an RCF facility, you see green, 130 million, we are increasing the use of securitization. We ended one in 2021, and that enabled us to strengthen our funding, and we had Intesa San Paolo join and BNP Paribas join the funding with the use of 100 million of the facility by the end of the quarter.
Something else we should point out is the cost of funding net of Tier 2 bonds, as you see in the central part of the slide. This is fully under control. It's about 140 basis points of the overall cost for all funding lines, excluding Tier 2 loans and bonds issued during 2021. And once again, this is a good indicator of our efficiency in collecting capital on the market. I was talking about our proprietary digital platform earlier. This is, of course, a very important element for us. And we were talking about this yesterday. Ever since 96, when the first release was published, we did 1,200 releases, a huge amount of updates and releases. So our 1.5 million of assets is contained in a database that has been updated several times and actually rewritten twice completely, and we can count on its robustness. Over the last 5 years, we had 300 new releases, and in the last 2 years, we had 50 releases in business intelligence and data analytics. As you see, the platform is a front end called the General Web, which is a platform used by our clients to communicate information totally digitally to us. So credit and all the documentation on assignment is actually managed through General Web. In last year, we had a totally digital assignment. And the back-end platform is called the Tor. It's our proprietary platform. The whole platform is totally proprietary, actually. This was one of the drivers behind the growth of General Finance and one of the things I firmly believed in ever since I started entering this business. It's fundamental to have access to data and to have access to a large amount of data and to be able to master them completely because we are the owners and the managers of the platform. All settlement, all processes behind the financing to companies are totally automated. Tor, through the treasury model, gets access to all funding systems that were just explained by Ugo and to all info providers. And we'll see later that these are companies that keep providing us with a huge amount of information online, which is what we need to manage rating, scoring, and insurance coverage. Another fundamental element for us is the speed of execution of disposal and of notification, which is absolutely fundamental. So the credit belongs, receivables belong to those who notify them first. So the LIR, the notification, comes before issuing assignments, and 143,487 automated registered mail messages were registered last year. Another fundamental thing for us is big data. When Stefano Biondini joined, he actually completed the management team working with me. We started working with big data, and we activated Click. By means of Click, the company can now be controlled and verified online through from human resources to management control to credit management to everything concerning their financial information and all data concerning forecasts and business plans. Another key element for us is our organizational structure. It's very simple. We do count on simplicity a lot. You said we have pretty simple financials. We have a simple business. It's a single issue, highly specialized business, and our growth is based exactly on the same components we started off with when we first established the company. We are specialized, we're not generic, and you see that in our organizational chart too. So the key managers, the key figures that are supporting me and working with me are people who have very clear and streamlined job descriptions, and everybody is actually designed to control the business and to implement speed of execution in the business. So this is really important. So why is it so important for us to count on our human resources? Because we have a very special business. We focused on those assigners and sellers, our clients, you see in the bottom left part. And normally, most of our clients are in either distressed or going through some turnaround. So we are like a kind of a hospital for companies in distress. Now, it seemed impossible in the past to get to the numbers we have now and to be able to grow in an industry which just didn't exist at the beginning. Indeed, the whole industry grew. The whole industry was created, in a way. A new market emerged. And we get to the numbers we have now by working with Lots of companies that are in a pretty weak position, which is represented in black or yellow in the pie chart you see in the bottom, whereas in the pie chart you see in the top, 84% of our clients have a good rating class. So you see the pie chart doesn't see green only because we are an outsourcer. General Finance assesses company portfolios with the outsourcing model. So you shouldn't see us as a lender. We're not someone who just lends money and doesn't work on receivables. Our activity is about managing receivables. This is not by chance that we manage a lot of yellow and red receivables too. So we provide our clients with a kind of a full service. We manage the whole portfolio concerned with receivables on companies. So we do work a lot on recourse factoring, which is very important for us. Non-recourse factoring is also growing quite a lot, and we'll talk about that when we speak about the new plans and the expansion of services we're thinking of. And our percentage of disbursement is about 82 to 83%, and it's pretty stable. So besides all other things, all the general finance assigners have, as an average, 83 assigned debtors. So this is much, much higher than the average of the industry. So another fundamental element for us is scattering risk, scattering our action through different businesses and the different categories and on the Italian and non-Italian businesses too. So our risk is scattered all over the world in a way. And this is even more visible in the next slide. So there's a slight mismatch in the duration of receivables. The average for General Finance is 50% versus 63% as a market average. So we have a lot of credits outstanding after 90 to 120 days. But if we look at the right-hand side chart, the most important thing we see here is that 90% of our assigned debtors, which is in total 18,000 people, do pay in due course. And this is actually the real secret behind everything I said. So 5% pays in 30 days after deadlines, and 90% actually pay everything they're supposed to pay without any delay at all. And this is really, really different from the market average. So normally, only 22% of assigned debtors pay punctually without delays. So this is the outcome of our work, and in particular, this is the outcome of this very specific business model and of the business area where we work. We work with distressed companies most. I know this is counterintuitive, less so now than it was years ago, but working with distressed companies, you actually reduce credit risk, operating risk, and you can actually cancel the disbursement risk because you have a whole legal system regulating this. It's like a hospital, as I said earlier. So when hospitalized, the companies are being submitted to heavy cures. I mean, they have advisors, they have specialists. We tend to cure, to heal the companies we work with. And we have a full legal protection so that the assigner can actually be fully covered and protected by law. So this is quite visible in the numbers. Ugo is going to share some numbers with us now, and this is also visible in the payment performance data, which is actually something coming from this particular industry we have been specializing in. Let me give you some color on our key market and the perspectives we started off from when thinking about our business plan and estimates for the next few years. We did try to compare some variables which are really important for us, considering that our business model is counter-cyclical. So we should always consider that this is a pretty unusual feature for us. So we tried to point out something which is very important for us. So the first is GDP. Of course, there's zero sensitivity or even reverse sensitivity here. So the first element, considering the business plan we have presented at the IPO, and it's something that is very visible to all of us, is the worsening of the macroeconomic scenario. The IMF expected Italy to grow by 2% just a few months ago. Recent estimates consider that the real GDP is supposed to drop by 0.2%. So once again, it's counterintuitive, but we've seen a green arrow here because this is going to give us an acceleration in effect. Eventually, the bad macroeconomics will mean more companies will need help and support in times of distress. Another element which may be counterintuitive too is that the inflation rate is picking up, and so since we will have bigger amounts of invoicing, the revenues are going to increase too, and they account for nearly 75% of our P&L. So we're all familiar with this. We see it every day on papers. The estimates for 2022 in Italy seem to indicate that the inflation rate is likely to be 8.1% at the end of the year versus 3.8% we projected just a few months ago. We're seeing this in 2022 already, and this is going to increase the perspectives we have of over 2 billion of turnover for the year. If we look at the data of the industry association as of the end of September, the growth of turnover in factory is expected to be plus 17% versus in inflation rate at production, which is plus 16%, which is the newest ISTAT data. So it's a one-on-one effect of inflation that supports the growth of turnover. Of course, the side effect of inflation will be felt on costs, at least partially. Fortunately for us, our cost base is actually discounting the fact that IT is insourced in-house, so we do pretty much everything in-house, and we have lower costs than we would have if we outsourced our platforms. So we estimate that 10 to 15% of our cost base is automatically inflation-linked, but for prudential reasons, we included inflation in all the cost base calculation, also to make sure we'll be ready to tackle even more severe cost increases than we expect today. Definitely, the performance of Euribor and monetary policies has changed the monetary policies completely in the last few months. As we commented with several of you in the last few months already, the model and positioning of general finance is very favorable in this condition because on one side, the asset duration is really limited. It's less than 80 days as of September 30. And with the relatively small amount of clients, we have about 220 assigned debtors today. This allowed us to reprice all of our assets in just a few weeks. And so we hedged virtually totally the increase in the cost of funding, and since this is wholesale funding, it's a one-on-one effect on the increase of the Euribor rate. So this is why we just put a flat horizontal arrow here, so we don't expect any negative impact from Euribor, even though for prudential reasons we included a partial change of Euribor on the asset front for 85% of the total increase to keep some leeway in terms of interest rate absorption too. Turnover, sellers' revenue growth has a positive effect on turnover, and so also the inflow of non-performing and is actually increasing. This is one of our key markets, and because of the scenario we are confronted with today, this is increasing. Then, as we said at the IPO, the factoring market is only partially a relevant market for general finance. It's a market that's mainly dominated by traditional players that operate within the banking industry. And in terms of business model, they seem to be working more in a financing rationale rather than credit outsourcing, which is our key business model. During 2022, we expect this market to increase quite a lot, 280 billion in the top range as against 250 billion in 2021. And for us, it's more important to look at non-performing exposure. So there's a whole series of new regulations and updated regulations that are being passed, and especially under the current macroeconomic conditions, many banking institutions are going to exit this market ever since the earlier delays, calendar provisioning and other past due incidents that tend to exclude banking players from this market. So, you know, there's a pretty long-term view here. The time horizon is 10 years. So the credit available for non-financial companies has become lower, also because of de-risking and portfolio deals that have been quite significant. The nominal credit stock from 2012 onwards has decreased by nearly 30%, which included the disposal of non-performing portfolios. So between 2020 and 2022, there were quite a few moratoria passed for mid-term reimbursements in particular. And so this is an element which definitely means that the credit available to companies may have some difficulties in terms of credit worthiness. And so there's less availability from the traditional bank players and more space for alternative players like General Finance. Now, considering this, considering the industry performance, we may notice that over time, the macro scenario brought about a deterioration of SMEs in Italy in particular. On the left-hand side, you see the total SMEs data by Cerved Group Score, which is the score that Cerved worked out looking at company financing. In the 3 years of pandemics, the amount of companies that encountered problems and troubles increased by over 10% percentage points, and it's nearly 40 percentage points today. And definitely in 2022, that 40%, I mean, if we had to calculate it today on a pro forma basis, that is even worse, that's even higher. And if you like, and if you look at the right-hand side of the slide, this is also visible in non-bankruptcy procedures that are registered every year in Italy. The average is 1,400 as an average in the last 10 years or so, and it's increased by 13% in the last 2 years. So this shows many opportunities for a player like General Finance, and having 220 clients, we still have a possible inflow of companies in distress that is seven times as big as the current client base of the company, which is quite visible and pretty relevant information on the amount of the potential market we can talk to.
And because of the backdrop and also envisaging that all the UTPs past dues and forborne versus the pre-money estimates that we also included in the IPO file broadened, also because based on the last estimate in 2023, pre-money, we were estimating 90 billion, including all NPEs and distressed money up until today, from now until 2024, is 120 billion. So it's sizable growth. And if from that stock of receivables, distressed receivables, and if we freeze out the short-term component, bottom right, and turn that into an over multiplying by four, with a rotation in line with the sector metrics, industry metrics, it means that the attackable or addressable turnover is about 40 billion. And these 40 billion today, we intercept about 2 billion, so about 5% market share. That gives you an idea of the size, of the magnitude of this very market. It's a potential market but it's becoming available as we move forward. It can be available to, well, $29 billion in 2023, but it's growing. It's growing more than 30% going forward to this market. So this is one of the very important points that we took into account when updating our estimates, taking in our forecasts. And we've summarized that in the previous slides as well. Very well. Let's start from the strategic guidelines. We are adopting a general finance. So growth, market growth, 3.4 billion of turnover in 2024. Of course, the growth can be achieved through strengthening our credit department and by strengthening our funding lines, our funding structure. And of course, we have a proprietary digital platform we rely on, and then we have a very strong capital base to support the business, and we'll drill down into a greater level of detail, and also on the sustainability and the ESG model that will characterize general finance growth. I told you about us being a vertically structured company, so the services we offer are the same product that is tailored to the different needs and that can complement our very business. So the non-recourse business or factoring is almost the entire factoring business. So we are growing slowly, but we are growing in a healthy way by experimenting a lot. Maturity factoring, we will increase our maturity factoring component. We are working on it. We have an ongoing project on tax credit. We are setting up procedures. We are running tests in the same way as we have worked in the distressed world. And then we are also working to improve notification activities and operations, and it's a complex backdrop there, so it's never transactions. So I mentioned we are being an outsourcer. It's never a single risk transaction. It's never a spot transaction, and we never enter a transaction with a risk without having a better knowledge, a full knowledge of that risk. And then, of course, advance on future credits and contracts. The commercial sales resources we rely on will be further strengthened. We will have an increase in headcount to strengthen our commercial staff. And then we also want to improve products and services, thus enabling us to address most of the portfolio our clients make available. Our clients generate 13 billion worth of business origination-wise, so there's a lot of room for maneuvering there. Also focusing on the active clients we already have by providing new products and services to them or additional products and services to them. Also for specific themes, balance sheet themes. And then the strengthening of our commercial structure, control of the business and the so-called PES that will be rolled out next spring. It's called NewPEF, PEF. We looked at the scoring process and I mentioned 1,200 disbursements through our platform, 26 years in existence, that's our platform, and we release it. And we have a tour platform. It's a complex system that has constantly been monitored, controlled, and updated, and we have to feed in new technologies as they evolve over time. Scoring, we're also focusing on it, and the scoring model for all of our factoring transactions, the pricing model as well, because we have new and different customers. And that had to be rolled out and included into our platform, and then from customer acquisition to actual disbursement, and the monitoring as well, the monitoring process. Monitoring is of paramount importance for us. The numbers and figures I mentioned before, and the results we have achieved can only be achieved through very tight monitoring. It's two different worlds. On the one hand, you have distressed companies that require a certain type of monitoring. Performing companies instead require a different type of monitoring. And we have to be able to offer both. It's two separate worlds. When it comes to scoring and assessing distressed companies, there are legal items to be taken into account before disbursement. And when you are getting ready to disburse and you are in presence of a bankruptcy procedure, this is different from a performing company where you don't have a bankruptcy issue at stake. So scoring, assessment of sellers, and assigned debtors evaluation. We are two different, completely different profiles. And at the end of the day, to make things very simple, we have three colors, green, yellow, and red. It's like being at a traffic light. It's easy to have the traffic light effect. If we were to use six colors, we wouldn't be able to have the same simple effect. In the next slide, you see the type of info we get, we draw to come to the so-called synthetic indicators. These are all the info we gather. We probe the market. We've been looking at the market for 30 years now. And where do we start from? We start from the bottom, practically, because it's of paramount importance to think that our receivables are insurable. 76% of general finance turnover is insured by the Allianz Group, Allianz Trade. They are the largest insurer worldwide. But credit insurance is not enough. We have COPAS, and they cover the rest of the insurance world. Why is that? It's COFAS. Why is that? It's important because insurance companies are the ones who record players who fail to pay or lack of payment. So score and 3 and 4, boxes 3 and 4, enable you to avoid the risks before the claim practically takes place or comes into existence. And together with Allianz, COFAS, they cover 80% of the global insurance world, so they enable us to be able to buy insurance and to buy, receivables, both in Italy and abroad, and at the same time be able to have an exit structure or strategy based on the risk profile and based on the info they provide us with, and then surveyed as well, and telling us about scoring and payment, and it's DNB as well, together with surveyed. Every company has a scoring, has a rating based on their accounts. But today we are using ratings dated back to 2020 or 2021. That's why the payment scoring, together with the info we get from the credit market, is providing enough info telling us how is a certain client performing when it comes to paying. Are they paying regularly? Are they paying only, not paying only some of their debts or payments? We have a scoring performance on both the sellers and the debtor. On the following slide, we have pricing figures, and it's a pricing risk-adjusted model. We have SMEs having a 3 to 5 million worth of turnover, and we have very large customers as well. We cannot apply the same method or pricing method depending on the magnitude, on the size of the company. It must be the scoring of the transaction you're looking into. It's a mix between seller's risk and the assigned debtor performance or risk profile. We never have a position or an item that is single risk, a transaction that is single risk. If you, for instance, have 25 companies easy to manage, it's different from having a company instead of providing retails. We manage thousands of tire companies and thousands of stores that sell shoes or clothing, and the business model is completely different. So we have more than 400,000 due dates, and you have to have a very strong management system in place. Otherwise, you run the risk of not being able to keep everything under control. And then last but not least, we have the business relationship with them. And they are somebody who is managing the business relationship is providing us info. So we've improved our platform. We've worked both on the back end and front end, because it's very important to have both. When you make investments within the business plan time horizon, we devote those investments to the digital platform. And one more thing, a few days ago we organized the first meeting conference on cybersecurity, because we are sure that cybersecurity is one of the most important elements for a company to be successful, for companies of the future to be successful. So we have cybersecurity people dealing with cybersecurity, and we organize conferences on cybersecurity to have the necessary competencies and skills in the market, and process automation, which is another paramount aspect.
Big data, artificial intelligence, everything we are implementing today, and most importantly, the huge amount of information we possess, will allow us in the short run to manage with automatic systems certain parts of our business, which will make our business less risky, and it will make it even better performing. Now, the human capital development is another fundamental element for us. We have a good balance between men and women. It's nearly 50-50. We have good balance between our people in the old historic office of Biella. Not only didn't we abandon it, we totally restructured it. We are now redecorating the last floor, and then we're finished. We also confirmed an agreement with our people for a smart working plan. Considering the excellent performance we obtained there, we believe this allows our people to have a better work-life balance. They will have more time for the family. But please believe me if I say that it's been extremely beneficial for the company too. The whole team responded beautifully to remote working plans. And actually, we noticed that working in this way makes people enjoy more peace of mind. And of course, we're talking about top quality people. And they actually exploited this possibility to have a better life-work balance. But it's been very beneficial for General Finance too. We have short-term and long-term incentive plans in place, and the welfare plan, of course, which is a very important element in our growth too. Some other factors that are very important are the development of the audit function. This is something else we're working on. We want to improve the risk management and compliance improvement systems too. We want to improve operational risk control and credit risk control. Of course, this is based on people procedures and IT procedures. ESG. I do believe that since General Finance funds companies that would otherwise risk simply closing shop, is in the business of safeguarding assets. It's assets from the Made in Italy and the Italian business world. Many people are working beautifully, and thanks to rescue operations, we were able to actually improve the health and to save a lot of the companies we're working with. Something else which is really important is governance. We have done our IPO in the STAR segment, which means, of course, that governance meets the most severe and stringent market criteria. And, of course, we also work on a lot of activities in our pipeline, in particular the climate assessment risk and non-financial statement and reporting. One final fundamental element is our project. General Finance is acknowledged as being one of a kind in Italy. I'm persuaded that we can actually exploit further potentials and persuade it that this business model of ours is suitable for being exported. We did start a working team. We have identified people who have a lot of experience, especially in international businesses that are sitting on the table with us today. And next year, we are going to present to you our potential expansion plans outside of the Italian market. Of course, we start with markets that lend themselves better to our penetration. So quite reasonably, the first market we're going to start doing business is in Spain, and then France, Portugal, and Greece will follow. Of course, all of those elements are, and I want to share this piece of information with you. We just started this business, but nothing of this has been planned for yet in any formal way. So it may well be that together with digital services and outsourcing services we can provide the companies with, all of those elements are likely to be further developed during the plan period. Ugo, back to you before we reach conclusions. Yes, this last part is about target projections as of 2024. I've tried to summarize it in just a few slides. So the first is a comparison of our targets at the pre-money and post-money phases as per business plan. So you see there's a pretty significant upwards review of the turnover. We said at the beginning what the main drivers behind this will be. So from 2.7 to 3.4 billion at the end of 2024 as against 1.4 at closing in 2021. In view and in line with increased turnover, we also revised upwards the net banking income from 37 to 49 million. If we look at the turnover performance, 37% is higher than the net banking income change, considering that turnover will also increase some elements of prudence and caution, especially considering that even though the situation is very favorable for us, we may actually see a slight decrease of unit margins in the near future. As far as net profit is concerned, here again we did a sharp review upwards from 15.9 million target pre-money to 29.5 at the end of 2024. The growth of net profit would benefit from the limited growth of cost, only 14% versus 27% increase in revenues, which means that the net profit is expected to increase by over 30% in terms of CAGR from 21 to 24. The objective and the challenge for this plan is that of keeping a commercial position in pricing and risk picture, which should be consistent with what we had in the last few years. So as far as our performance or capital performance is concerned, we want to be very disciplined, and the return on capital should be more or less in the same levels of the pre-money plan, which didn't really have any capital increase. So in 2024, ROE is expected to be 36% as against 39% of the pre-money plan, as against 42% in 2021, which was, of course, counting on a much smaller capital base. And as far as our commercial positioning is concerned, as I said before, our objective is that we want to keep focusing on the corporate segment, so companies that have turnovers in excess of 20 million. The objective of the plan is that of acquiring about 34 new net clients, so to go up from 70 to 100 sellers in the corporate business, and versus retail, which has lower margins, which should be stable. It should be around 130 names. As we also saw, between 2020 and 2021, the amount of debtors increased from 12,000 to 17,000, the assigned debtors, and so that very important ratio between debtors and assigned debtors, which grew to over 80 during 2022. So the objective is that of increasing diversification of our portfolio even further. Here again, even though it sounds counterintuitive, we want to grow and at the same time decrease the risk level of our portfolio by means of a strong diversification by sector, by area, and by counterparty in particular. The average debtor per seller at the end of 2024 should be more than 100 debtors per seller. So that, in terms of understanding the performance of our revenue, is a very important element too, because once again, we're going to further stress our capability to outsource the company by means of acquiring new factoring contracts, which is what happened in the last 2 or 3 years. Income breakdown. The purpose is that of keeping more or less the same weight of commissions because of all the reasons we presented so far, in particular our ability to manage very diversified portfolios with very good and positive performance. So the idea is that the commissions should actually reflect our capability to provide premium service. And as against the average of the sector and comparable brokers, the total commissions on revenues should stand at about 72% at the end of 2024, which is basically in line with what we had in 2021. Should we look at the last line? The assumption is that we may see a reduction, a discount on average commissions, actually, to reflect the average size of counterparties we're going to manage and acquire over the last years. And so the average monthly commission on turnover and the average interest on seller are going to change, and the average interest on salary is going to increase because of the changes in the Euribor rate. Funding, with the increase of the credit component, will increase up to 650 by the end of 2024. The mix will change quite substantially. By the end of 2024, the securitization portfolio, sorry, platform will be the main funding source with nearly 400 million. So that 400 million by the end of 2024 is fully funded already, since the securitization organization can count on two lenders, so they have already made a financing commitment for 400 million euros. So as far as the other lines are concerned, we'll keep in continuity with what we have today, and the objective is that of keeping good diversification so that the funding base will be fully differentiated in order to reduce the liquidity risks. Because of the increase of the Euribor rate, offset by a better funding mix in terms of spread, the overall cost of funding, including bonds, Tier 2, will increase up to 3.4% by the end of 2024, as against the 1.7% in 2022. As far as the spread is concerned, if we put together all the average rate and the late payment component, it will increase by 120 basis points, up to 5.4%, and the cost of funding is 3.4%, and the brokerage spread is going to decrease by about 60 points. Once again, we're being very cautious here because it will contract for two reasons. The first is the partial pass on of Euribor to the clients, to the assigners, and quite reasonably, the pass-through percentage will be totally accounted for. And another possible element is a possible reduction of units commissions because we are going to increase the size of our average clients. So there's going to be a commercial discount which is bigger than the one we apply to smaller retail clients. Something else which we feel should be looked with a lot of caution in the plan to reflect the macroeconomic situation, which is in turn an opportunity and have a possible impact on the asset quality, performance, even though the results in the first three quarters seem to point to the opposite. So to be on the safe side, we tried to think of the NPL stock and provisions stock, thinking of a pretty challenging macroeconomic situation. On our clients' portfolio, this may indeed have an impact, even though in terms of exposure, thinking of, in particular of markets that suffer from the Russian-Ukraine war, and thinking of energy-intensive sectors that suffer big cost increases, so these are actually performing less than the average of the sector, but we believe the NPL ratio is increasing by 8%, 0.8% as against 1.6 at the end of 2022. So eventually the non-performing loans at the end of 2024 should be 5 million, and the cost of risk would be definitely higher than we had in the last few years. So the cost of risk as to 2024 will be 9 cents as against 2 in 2022 and 2 basis points in 2022, which is more or less in line with the numbers of 2020. So we are being very cautious here because of the very special situation we see today, and that forms the basis for our forecast. Operating costs, well, this is pretty much in line with the performance we had from 19 to 21. The average CAGR is 14%, including the cost of personnel and administration expenses. The cost of human resources is going to increase a bit more because we are strengthening our human resources pool with new skills, in particular monitoring, risk monitoring and control, management control and commercial area. We are hiring nearly 30 new people in 3 years. And as per law, we are also going to enhance our incentive systems, in particular MBO and long-term incentive plans that are going to have an impact on human resources cost. Cost-income ratio, considering the favorable performance of cost versus revenues, is actually decreasing versus 37% at the end of the second quarter. It's going to be less than 30% at the end of 2024. So we consider 30% is the minimum we can achieve. So we believe that in 2024, with 3.4 billion, we can actually go down to the minimum possible level and enhance the economies of scale as much as possible through our platforms, through our processes, and thanks to the main growth itinerary we embarked on in 2016. We are going to invest 3 million, which is included under cost and amortization during the plan period. 75% of that will be actually processes, digital platforms, and in particular the strengthening of credit management processes, plus the intangible assets, which are going to increase because of bigger investments from 1.7 to 2.4 million euros. And finally, before I yield the floor back to the CEO for his conclusions, let me give you some color on the financial stability and asset ratios. Of course, the big challenge and the big objective for the plan is that of using the capital we have collected at IPO. Only part of that is currently employed in the first few months after the IPO. So the CET1 ratio will decrease because of the bigger exposure to credit, which is going to increase during the plan time. So we plan 11%, and we believe that 11% is easily sustainable, considering that the minimum regulatory level is much lower than the conventional industries for this risk profile, and considering the prudential buffer we have included versus minimum levels, also in view and in line of our dividend policy. Total capital ratio is expected to stand higher than 13%, so here again we have a buffer of over 5 percentage points. Prudentially, we consider no improvements in terms of risk densities, that still stand at around 80%, even though this depending on how regulations evolve, and actually there's quite a lot of discussions going on here at the level of the European Factoring Association, for instance. So we're thinking with the European authorities about a possible lower risk weighting than the conventional lending business because of the exposure to receivables, trade receivables that normally have much lower loss levels than the conventional financial sector. So we also considered, in continuity with what we've seen in the last few years, a payout ratio of about 50%. We also shared that with the regulators. And this means we will actually have about 50 million of returned earnings, which is quite satisfactory. Finally, in our estimates, we have included a further issuance of Tier 2 bonds during 2024 to replace the amortization components and supervision components associated to the two currently outstanding bonds. So we're likely to issue more bonds in 2024, and by then, hopefully, the market context will be more conducive than the one we say today. So Massimo, back to you for your conclusions.
Thank you, Ugo. I'll focus on just a few items. Turnover 2024, 3.4 billion, net profit 21.5 million, so 81 million as a ROE, 36%. These are the objectives, the targets we have set ourselves. These are targets that, according to me, are within our reach. They are sound, and our business plan is a simple one. The increase in turnover with an average CAGR of 30% on a yearly basis is indeed, versus the past, is very prudential. It's also, what is also prudential is what we've factored in for costs and lower revenues, and the figures we've fed into the plan are figures that are based on our ability to do business, and I think that our business has the right track record to show and do again what we've proved we can do. Profitability is flat and risks are constantly monitored and processes are sound and are constantly being strengthened on both IT and HR side. Capital for funding purposes, capital on funding, we've proven that we can talk about the figures in a very, very confident way. Our team is the true value of our company. The team supporting me, I think, is one of our strengths, and a very, very favorable backdrop, extraordinarily favorable. And so far, I can confirm we have no problems in acquiring new clients and files. And the performing company market has a problem to access lending, and therefore the overall backdrop for both distressed companies and performing companies is makes up a sizable market. And then last but not least, before thanking you for joining us and listening to us for over an hour, and I hope you managed to carefully listen to both myself and Ugo, I think the paramount thing here is that we have been very conservative. I'm talking to you and I'm one of the main shareholders in the company, and so it's being cautious is one of our main features. We would like to thank you very much. And now there's time for questions for both who are connected remotely and those who are here with us in the room. Thank you very much. This is the Chorus Call operator. We are now about to start the Q&A session. If you want to ask a question, please press star and one on your phone keypads. In order to be removed from the Q&A queue, press star and two on your phone keypad. Please ask your question using your phone headsets. If you want to ask a question, please press star and one on your phone. Ma- Manuela Meroni, Intesa Sanpaolo. I have a few questions. The first one is on margins. You showed the margins you expect to decline within the business plan time horizon. Is one of the reasons why you're going to focus on corporate clients? And the other reason is a transfer of a transfer effect of the rate increase, so a reduction in your net margin, so instead of having a pass-through. Is it because you were being particularly cautious, or and what is it that you saw in the previous years when it comes to being able to pass through not only 80% but 100% of the rate effect? And then volumes. Are you actually seeing an increase in demand for factoring products because the banking system is worsening, it's the access to lending conditions, or what is your take going forward in this respect? And then on capital optimization or maximization, you told us that the growth in credit or lending goes hand in hand with turnover. How can you maximize that? How can you maximize the capital use, and what are the levers that enable you to do that? And then always as to capital, could you elaborate on your target capital, 11.2%, what is the ideal level with which you want to manage your company? And then you mentioned possible changes in the regulation, in the CRR regulation. Could you elaborate on that and give us some more color on the possible effects that could affect general finance? Ugo, I will start with an introduction, and then I'll hand it over to you for the details. So the maneuver somehow has come to an end. Starting from Wednesday next week, we will have completed the change for our clients from fixed to variable or floating rate, Euribor-linked float rate. So we've changed the rate into a spread. It was an orderly maneuver, and we shared it with our clients, and the prudential, the cautious effect that was added to it made our customers aware of it. We've completed that. Those who did not accept it, we think that we have 220 companies who are our clients, so it would not be fair to say that we don't know them. We know them very well, and we want to share the complexity of the market with our clients. It's a hard moment in time, high cost of raw materials. We are in a credit crunch situation. So if we had somehow put more pressure on our clients, forcing them to accept a certain protocol whereby we were increasing conditions without sharing them with them, with the clients first, would not have been a far-sighted transaction or approach. So we've managed to complete that maneuver. Data are better now. Where we were seeking better performance, we've revised conditions. So we've discounted that over the business plan time horizon. So we've discounted a greater caution versus the results we are aiming to achieve. And then as to the other question you asked, the theme is what we see on a day-in, day-out basis. So the banking system is very low in somehow reacting and making decisions when it comes to lending access to lending. So, and then think of the 106 regulation, that makes it even slower. That's why competitiveness and profitability we show stems from our ability to react promptly, fastly, and to have made-to-measure or very customized solutions for our clients. So, CAGR at 50%, if you think 20% in 2019, 50% now, These are all now after the process from 2019 until now. So we know that companies need a prompt response, a fast response, and they need an interlocutor, they need a partner to be able to provide them with customized or tailor-made solutions. So that's why this market is growing so fast for us, especially in the distressed world, but also in the performing world. Before I hand it over to Ugo, let me say the following. One of the most important things is the speed of reaction, with which we work with our partners. And receivables have to move around and to circulate, and it's very important for receivables, for credit, to be able to move around so that we work a lot on the fact that dues are paid upon expiry, on the due date, so that we do not have transactions that have a payback guaranteed in the very short run. All parameters are under control, by the way, because there's an umbrella. We have the credit insurance policy. It's a financial policy that is disbursed on a specific date. Within 180 days, we get the money back if the payment is not made on the due date. So if we put all those factors together, we can understand that it's quite simple to keep everything under control, to keep how payments and the payment curve is under control, and take actions, corrective actions if necessary, on a weekly basis. If there are delays in payments, if delays are above certain parameters, and if sellers are not behaving in compliance with what we expect them to do or with the values we have set. As to the question you asked about the banking system and the access to loans and lending, as we said before, there's a 17% saturation of the market, and as of end of September, we've gotten to a 55%. So that meant there's a larger demand that is not being met by the conventional industries, the traditional banking industry. And we've seen that also in the business breakdown and composition. In 2022, the number of performing companies on turnover went up a few percentage points. We've acquired clients and companies that are not in bankruptcy procedures. They are performing, and from that perspective, we constantly talk to our commercial people. We have a lot of performing companies who are turning to us and somehow start a business relationship with us. And this is a consequence of the current situation. And then working capital, what happened to working capital with cost increase and with the passing through of those costs to corporate clients, on the one hand, it's true that margin-wise, profitability-wise, nothing changes for us. The EBITDA is the same, the EBITDA ratio is the same, but there's an explosion or a completely different situation in the capital. In the energy business, there was a multiplying factor in having to resort to lending. So there's a channel that is going to support the explosion in the need of working capital. So we are there ready to somehow have a franchise in that respect and be available in that respect. And then from the latest lending surveys show us that there's a contraction, there's a shrinkage in the available money, in the available loans. So target-wise, for instance, we think that the indicators we are providing to you for an end-of-plan figures, those are an ideal situation after we've used the proceeds we gathered during the IPO. We use this slide It's the capital stack we are showing you for banks versus the capital stack we have for an intermediary working according to 106, Regulation 106. So there are a number of parameters that are not applicable. So we manage the business with a lower capital requirement, if you wish. And this has to be taken into account. And somehow these factors have a greater importance, and then consider anti or counter-cyclical buffers that are, or ESG buffers that come into play because of this moment in time, and capital buffers that probably will be introduced. So that is an additional positive factor that enables us to manage our business, our factory's business, with less capital weight or less capital requirement to do the same thing. So we think that 11% or above 10% capital requirement is a reasonable level, is a reasonable threshold, in which is consistent with our dividend policy, which we have, by the way, shared with the regulators before the or pre-IPO, pre-money, to be sure we were heading in the right direction capital-wise. And when we refer to lending and versus RWA, there are a number of elements that enable us to make the use of capital more efficient. They're already included in our business plan. The first one, as Massimo was mentioning, is the average duration of receivables, CSO, the DSO, the day of payment outstanding, of sales outstanding, and then there were extensions on the average deadlines within a portfolio, and everything was then retraced in September 2022. DSO went down 7 days from 83 to 77 and days of sales outstanding. That means less and lower capital absorption. And that, of course, has to be worked out versus or vis-a-vis turnover, and also then the duration and maturity of receivable plays a role. And then insurance, the benefit we get from having an insurance, that is also very important for RWA purposes, and that there's a short, a small lever effect. Once we've been through the IPO, the RWA amount that can be put in the name of the insurance company, CRM-wise, has been increased, so there's an increase in the capital absorption when it comes to guaranteed receivables or loans guaranteed by the insurance company. When it comes to RWAs, the quality of the debtor's portfolio also matters. The rating of debtors that you have within your portfolio plays a role. 84% minimum rating per debtor in the two top classes, and the rated companies enables us to have a lower capital absorption, and it's an external rating we get. From a growth and evolution perspective, there are potential upsides that we can leverage. For product portfolio, there are two levers that we can enact as a company. We normally don't use them very much. And it's debts vis-a-vis public administration. And we've done so with some factoring deals. We've done so with the public administration. And that could lead to an increase in the factoring business, or that is debtors coming from the PA. And it's the acquisition of trade receivables and instead of past due bills or invoices. So if we look at the product mix, that could generate a positive impact in terms of using capital in a more efficient way. And then tax credits, some of these positive factors are not included in the business plan. From a regulatory viewpoint, we constantly interact with the European Factoring Association and, ECB and the European Bankers Association interacts with the European Factoring Association, and they talk to one another, and then on they talk about LCD, they talk about cost of risk, which is different from the traditional lending business, and that should be accompanied by, as it happened for giving up one's faith or one's salary as a guarantee, that should lead to an RWA discount versus corporate lending. And these talks between the European Factoring Association and the Banking Association are very interesting. We don't know what the results down the line will be. There are markets, for instance, giving up one-fifth of one salary as a collateral. This is a very widespread business in Italy, but then there are other forms in Germany, forms of collateral that are adopted in Germany. So that could lead to a positive a revision of CRR to introduce a discount factor, so to say. And then the European Factoring Association are talking about 75%. Today, we have a 75% absorption, so going down to 50% by 2024 would have enjoy 3 percentage points in the RWA area, so that would be beneficial for us. And so this upside that is so far only theoretical, we'll see whether or not that can be translated into practice.
The research we have in our hands today from Akros and Banca Intesa lead all the way up to 2023. So can you give us some color about your estimates for the end of the year of 2023? Considering the funding conditions on the market, do you expect any impact on 2023 and 2024 of everything you've presented so far? Thank you. Now, we have published the estimates for 22 and 24. We didn't really split out 2023. It's actually a mixture of the numbers for 22 and 24. So the big acceleration vis-a-vis the pre-money estimates was 2022, which is why we published the 2022 figures. 22 was definitely better because of the bigger turnover from all the reasons we tried to summarize. Between 23 and 24, we think growth is going to be pretty homogeneous, and neither funding nor asset quality seem to point at any particular difference vis-a-vis the trend we may expect there. So it should be a pretty linear performance. Good. So these are the estimates of IMI and Banca Akros. Well, you should ask IMI and Banca Akros why they came up with these estimates. As far as our numbers are concerned, the numbers we presented here will totally replace the business plan we originally released when we presented the IPO. Hello, Chiriotti from Mediobanca. Can you give us some general picture of the competition in our business? So who are your main competitors? Considering the high revenues and performance, don't you think there is a risk that new players may enter your market segment? And are there any barriers to entry in your particular business? Thank you. Well, as we speak, we cannot say there is a real competitor. I mean, there is a market, of course, and of course it's an attractive market, and there are some potential competitors that are starting to work in this market. This is certainly true. We can actually make a few names like Sidra Fattoring. They were born with a DNA which is really similar to General Finance. They are more specialized in micro companies and SMEs today. Then later, CF Plus was also established amongst the various potentials for business development. They also mentioned distressed factoring. And actually, the actual definition of distressed factoring is pretty recent. So this is actually one positive element. Then there are CRR 106, the new initiative from BOFI. Also, they've always been pretty attracted to this sector. There are some other businesses like Limiti, for instance. They're doing something in this space too. However, as we speak, there's no single company which is hyper-specialized and hyper-vertical as we are. So unlike pretty much all the players I just mentioned, we only have one job. We are hyper-specialized. So this is why I compared ourselves to a hospital. We are a highly specialized clinic. So I see there is a lot of movement and a lot of interest, and I think it's a very positive thing because we're thinking of pretty big numbers here. But also, I think this speaks in favor of the credibility of our company and of the market in general. So in the past, we were the only ones, and so in the past, it was really complicated to explain what General Finance was all about. It just collecting funding and thinking of the important structures we have created today. Well, you know, this is also based on the fact that people understood our business model, and this really became a market, which was very good for us. And as for key barriers to entry, I think there are two fundamental elements, which is experience, the capability of having a team that's been working on this particular sector for over 15 years now, and the IT platform and the very high level of socialization. So counting on 15 years of advanced and head start in a very complicated business like ours is one of the reasons why some of the players that started to think about this industry, well, you know, they have released a lot of statements and intentions, but not much has been really seen as far as numbers are concerned. So, of course, I still respect all of our competitors. I really wish our competitors will grow in the future because that would mean the market is growing and Italy needs it and will need it even more after 2023. So, I can say another fundamental element is that funds and the government in particular is now looking into distressed companies. So many times we find ourselves working with Invitalia, and I think this is a very good piece of news because this means that distressed companies are just no longer seen as something that should be thrown away and disposed of at the quickest possible price. But it's a company that stands for made in Italy and stands for excellence of the country and needs to be protected and safeguarded. I think that also the new regulations and evolving regulations on crisis indicators to try and prevent crisis and help the banking industry engage in de-risking before getting to UTP or NPS status, well, this is something which is becoming more and more important. You'll find it in the report we just presented. There's a box on the specific activities we are performing within credit institutions, and we're also working to favor the creation of debt funds and equity funds that will actually be specializing in assisting companies that are in need of healing.
I'm Tremontana from Banca Akros. Thanks for your presentation, and I have two questions. One is about the capital resources and the dividend policy, capital ratios, sorry, and the dividend policy you have shared with Banca Italia. So in case the market were even more brilliant than you expected to be, so would you think of having bigger growth rates? Do you think there could be an even bigger erosion of capital resources? So if that happened, are you prepared to review that 50% payout ratio to favor the growth of the company? And what's the trade-off between shareholders' remuneration and growth? And my second question is more longer term. So you've been thinking of developing other Southern European markets in the near future. I think one of the main competitive advantages you have is your network of relationships with local professionals that are very familiar with the companies you work with. And that kind of network is really hard to build. It takes a lot of time. Of course, you've done it throughout your experience. So do you think you could replicate that same experience in other markets? Because this is typically Italian with the Italian Chapter 11-like procedures. So other European markets may have different procedures, and most importantly, you couldn't count on the same network of professionals you rely on here. Well, thank you. As to your first question, I think that it takes a lot of good equilibrium and balance in proper business management, which means a good balance in understanding growth potential and also in safeguarding the lawful expectations of shareholders. I'm personally a shareholder, and I, of course, think it makes a lot of sense to maximize growth potential. But at the same time, growth potential should not become explosive. All the numbers and all the ratios that we found a plan on, today we are growing 20%, so we could actually speed up for the plan between today and the end of the year. But before we do it, we need to be fully structured. We need to fully implement the existing plan. We need to fully implement all procedures and to have all the right people we need to work with us. So this doesn't mean we're going to give up any possible new element that may push us forward faster than expected. However, we may want to speed up and accelerate by structuring our capital well without stressing capital ratios. So we're certainly going to do that, but we are going to do it by trying to optimize our growth. So the numbers in our plan are numbers that we are working with, but we came to those numbers with a lot of mathematical thinking. We're carefully evaluated the assets where it can count on. We didn't actually work on, mention the so-called LIR, the L-I-R. It's a very technical thing. I mean, our credit is managed at 18 to 24 months, and the numbers we count on today are the 220 active businesses we work with. So they actually project mathematically sound numbers, unless there are any sudden misfortunes of our businesses that cannot be forecast and foreseen. But the numbers are very clear. So based on that, we added a very limited number of possible new clients because we want to continue providing bespoke, tailor-made products, and we want to become more and more relevant for those companies where our value added will be such that our great caution on the revenues front will actually pay off. And I'm sure that we have been overly cautious. The reality of things will prove we've been very, very attentive. So I think the big value we can count on is the growth of the company, the attention we're given to the increase of revenues, and the greatest care of NPEs. So should everything translate into speeding up our business, we'll certainly think about it and look at it, but we don't want to have any impact on the dividend expectations from our shareholders today.
Now, you've touched upon something which is absolutely fundamental, and we hinted at that before, which is the network. So definitely our network is our starting point, but please remember that the Big Four are all present in all the countries we are looking at. So the starting point will be involving credit entities and one of the four Big Fours normally. So in other words, we're all working with international law firms. Once again, if we compare ourselves to a hospital, we have the right doctors for our clinics in Spain, for sure. France, I would say, too. And they are more or less the same large groups and consulting firms and law firms that we work with in Italy. What is actually prompting us to be very careful and cautious, and the reason why we're going very slowly and carefully about this future expansion, is that we cannot and do not want to improvise on regulations and laws. In Italy, we started with our first business proof in 2006. So we did start with business proofs, and we'll do the same in other markets. So if we see the conditions are there not to risk losing money, we will start operating in other countries too. If we don't see the right conditions, or if there's any unexpected challenge we haven't realized so far, then we will either change country or change our minds completely and put the new expansion projects on the back burner. So, you know, even when we went through with the IPO, it didn't really happen overnight. I mean, we do have a lot of projects in our pipeline. The company is 40 years old today, so it would be worrying if we had no projects. We do have a lot of projects and new potential. Today, we are in the right position to assess them one by one and to start implementing them, but we'll only do it if the right prerequisites are there. Because if we do expand outside Italy, we want to do it with interesting solutions and without creating any problem for the Italian mother company, which is performing so well.
Are there any other questions? I'm asking, of course. So far, there are no questions. Let me remind you that if you want to ask a question, you can press star and one on your phone keypad. Very well. For those who are here and those who are connected remotely, I would like to thank all of you for joining us today. For those of you who are here in the room, we can have a toast together. So thank you very much for joining us today. Thank you. Bye.